think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
So they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like, in Argentina for River Plate or Boca Juniors, or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas.
My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 263 of Low Limit Football on this 18th of November, 2019. I am your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight, the international break is in full swing with a host of matches from around the world. World Cup qualifying has already begun in Asia. African Cup of Nations qualifying has begun during this break as well. The European Championship field is finally finishing up taking shape, and the CONCACAF Nations League group play is winding down. We're going to discuss all that and much, much more with our special guest, Semper Inter's Nima Tavale, who will be joining us in just a moment. But first, my man, Mr. Roberto Rojas, how are you?
Very well, but I have an important question. I always like to pose an important question every week when we start the show.
Yep.
Is Lamar Jackson your MVP choice right now?
Oh, he's got to be. He's got to be, right?
I think so, yeah. I think he's been incredible so far.
I know. We're talking about the other football, of course, but he has had one incredible season. I can't see how he wouldn't be. I mean, I know everyone's going to look at the 49ers being undefeated. Actually, I think they lost their first match this weekend.
They did, yeah. They ended up coming back this weekend against the Cardinals.
Yeah, so I mean, between that, you've got the Patriots that are running well. So no one particular person stands out to me. But Lamar Jackson absolutely does. I think at this point, and obviously with Patrick Mahomes getting injured and missing all those weeks, he's kind of out of the running there. So I would say, yeah, definitely. In college football, by the way, Tua Tagovailoa, I'm going to mess up his name.
Yeah, I know you're talking
quarterback
about.
Quarterback at Alabama.
I was actually going to ask you about that. Yeah. What do you think?
I feel terrible for him.
He went through a successful hip surgery.
Today, yeah. And it's funny because, as you know, Rob, I was in Charlotte all weekend touring colleges with my daughter. And one of the stops we made was Clemson. We were at Clemson University this weekend, which, by the way, is a fantastic, fantastic campus. And the football stadium right on campus is amazing to see. I bought a nice Clemson pullover. And, you know, we flew in and out of Boston. And when I landed, we went to Italy, Mario Batali's store in Boston. And as I'm getting off the elevator at Italy, there is a guy who is, like, all decked out in Alabama. And all he wanted to do, it looked like he wanted to fight me, to be honest with you. So, but it was crazy. So, Rob, let's table the hand egg American football discussion, right? Let's get back to the real business at hand and the real football. Joining us now on Low Limit Football, and I'm going to bring him in early because we're going to get to discuss a lot of stuff, and he's always a wonderful friend of the show. Semper Inter's Nima Tavale is here with us. Nima, how are you tonight?
Hi, guys. I'm good. Thanks for having me on. It's always a pleasure to be on with you guys.
And it's always great to catch up with you. Let me ask the trivia question real quick. And this one's more directed at Rob. But, you know, at the end of the show, Nima, if you want to chime in on some answers, I'd be more than happy to take them. I did some research. We saw Cristiano Ronaldo score his 99th goal in international play this week. And he is second on the all-time list. He ranks actually number one overall for active scores in international play. So, Rob, I would like you to give me the top five active scores in international football.
Ooh.
That's it.
Active they're, meaning still
they're,
playing.
They're still playing for their national teams.
Okay. All right.
Okay. And there's actually six names. There's a tie for fifth.
Okay.
So I thought you should know that. So.
All right. I got a few names already.
Good. So, and then Nima, if you wanted to chime in at the end of the show, you know, we'll have it a two-way question there so you can help out at the end. All right.
Sure. Sure. Cool.
So let's get down to opening thoughts tonight. And this is another reason why I want to have Nima on early rather than in our normal guest slot is because I wanted to discuss Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Zlatan Ibrahimovic announced that he's leaving the LA Galaxy middle of last week. It seems like a month ago that he announced this. Basically saying, you know, you asked for Zlatan, I gave you Zlatan. And then the speculation began. Where is Zlatan going, right? So, Nima, I want to throw at you first because I have a couple of things I want to talk about with this. One, I want to talk about Zlatan's effect on MLS. Was he the player with the greatest effect all time in MLS? I want to ask you that question. And I want to ask you your speculation as to where he might land next.
I think for sure. I think he was, I mean, he's the biggest star to play in the MLS, I think, because, you know, the big three are Messi, Zlatan, and Ronaldo, Cristiano Ronaldo. I mean, during this era, at least, mm-hmm. They've been the big three. They've been the three biggest names in this era of football, and that have always caused a stir, biggest stars, if you will. So I think definitely for him to come. But the thing is, you have to remember when he came, he didn't arrive in the MLS like Wayne Rooney, who was pretty much spent. I mean, although I really respect Wayne Rooney for what he's done, but his best was way past him when he came to the MLS. Same thing with Steven Gerrard. David Beckham was a different situation. He was also way past it, but he was never really that kind of a player. He was more, the kind of a player who played more in like a deep lying central midfield role. He was never like that big goal scoring name, but he was like as a brand name. I think Beckham coming there, he was the biggest player to have played there until Ibrahimovic came. And Ibrahimovic came, you know, basically with after a very difficult knee injury, basically unfit, and he leaves scoring 53 goals in 58 games. Mm-hmm. I mean, he delivered. He really delivered. And he really turned out to be worth all the hype. I mean, just the first goal he scores in the MLS is so typical Ibra. It's so typical Zlatan to score like that. Mm-hmm. And he continues scoring ridiculous goals like that and just mesmerizes people everywhere he goes. So I think, yes, I think his effect was he brought the MLS to a level that it's never been to in terms of international, like in terms of people from outside the U.S. looking at the league, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny that – no, I'll just jump in here. It's funny that you give that type of opinion because then there are, of course, cases of how, you know, you look at the big star that have come in and have led into the effect. You had mentioned Beckham, you'd mentioned Steven Gerrard, Wayne Rooney. I can even add players such as David Villa, Kaká, many others, Thierry Henry. But I think we can easily say that Ibrahimovic coming into this league had a big effect, I think, for people who obviously follow the league here in the United States and obviously those that have been able to respect it outside of the world. But, you know, I think one of the big opinions that have been very divided in when you can say of Ibrahimovic's impact at the LA Galaxy, yes, you know, you can't deny the fact that he was on tremendous form. You know, as you said, 53 goals in 58 games. That's amazing. Yeah. But the one issue that I think maybe is a taint, I don't know if you could probably say this, Nima, but I would love your opinion on it, is the fact that he wasn't able to win any silverware. I mean, does that give a big stain on his career there, or do you feel that the effect is still
no. No, because he couldn't have done anything more. If you score that many goals as a striker, the problem is that the rest of the team is not good enough. And let's be honest, the Galaxy, in terms as far as the MLS goes, they're not one of the best teams in that league. It is the Seattle Sounders. It is the Torontos. It is the Atlantas. You know what I mean? Like, these teams have even the new LA team is better. Yep. Is better built. The Galaxy aren't what they used to be during the Beckham years. They're not good enough. They're nowhere near good enough. So I don't think you can say that he failed or it's a taint on his career. I think that he did everything he you could have asked of him to do.
Yeah, you know, I want to agree with you. I there's only so much that he could do as one player, and I know everyone likes to point to those championship moments, right? But like you said, even up until that last match against the LA Galaxy, the Galaxy dominated with him over LAFC. If you think about it, it was only that playoff match that we really saw the LAFC be able to get over that hump. But every time Carlos Vela, who was the MVP, who was the star, the goal scoring record, and everything. Every time he faced Zlatan, and I say that with a grain of salt because, they don't play against each other one-on-one, right? I mean,
no.
It's 11v11.
No.
But Zlatan always shined brighter than Carlos Vela in those matches. I mean, he really did.
It's so funny you mention that because this is something that, I remember, his career has been 20 years long now. And I remember in the beginning, when he was 19, 20, 21, they kept saying he goes missing in the narrative was he goes missing in big matches, which is ridiculous to say that to a 20-year-old, 21-year-old.
Sure.
Instead, and then his way of handling that was to rebuild himself or actually continue building himself so that he instead now has become the only player in history to have scored in every big derby game in world football, at least in Europe, except for the Der Klassiker. He scored in every single derby game, big game, the El Clasico. He scored in the Milan derby for two teams. He scored Juve-Milan. He scored in Inter-Juve. He scored in Liverpool United. He scored in the Manchester derby. Now in the LA derby as well. And when they were matching him up against Carlos Vela, that's when he really shone through. This is something that he came up that he developed later part of his career. I mean, let's remember that Ibra was not a big goal scorer until that season with Mourinho when he scored 25 goals. That's the thing that's so amazing with this guy, is that for as long as he's been playing, I don't know if we can really say that he's peaked yet. That's weird saying that about a 38-year-old player. I honestly don't know if he's peaked yet. I mean, sure, his speed might not be what it was. His reaction might not be what it is. But I don't know in terms of as a player if he's peaked yet. Because if you look at except for his second year at Juventus, he's always improved himself from the previous season until he got that horrible injury. But then look at what he'd done after that. I mean, he basically has used the MLS as a kind of a rehab league. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's used it as a rehab to build up his knee again. And now he's at his prime. And that's why I think that he's playing it very, very, he's playing the game very cleverly now, because I think he wants to go to a team that plays in the Champions League, that can win trophies domestically, and he wants to end by giving you one big go to win one more trophy.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's you bring up a great segue for me, because now I want to look at where he's going to go. I mean, everyone said his goodbye to the LA fans, the LA Galaxy fans. He never ruled out leaving MLS, you know what I mean? There's still a potential. He didn't say goodbye MLS. He said goodbye LA Galaxy. So there's some people are talking about this as, maybe he's not leaving the United States. Maybe he's staying and going to Atlanta United or going to NYCFC and try to do it, from that standpoint. Do it in New York. He did it in LA. Let's do it in New York. I mean, a lot of people are talking about that. We saw, I believe it was Greg Burley, had suggested that he would go to Liverpool. We've heard him possibly linked to, if I remember correctly, Bologna. Does that sound right?
Yeah, yep. Bologna. Yeah, because Siniša Mihajlović is his brate or brother in Serbo-Croatian, and he's got cancer, and obviously Ibrahimović wants to help him out. The Liverpool link was ruled out by Jurgen Klopp, who spoke to a Swedish newspaper saying that, you know, he absolutely loves Ibrahimovic, but he doesn't see him being able to come to Liverpool, and he joked because of his past with United. That's the thing about Klopp. When you look at his interviews, you don't really know if he's joking or telling the truth because he always laughs.
Right.
So you don't really know. Sometimes really don't know. But yeah, I think it would be such. I mean, he would give Liverpool another dimension in their game that they don't have. But him and Klopp absolutely love each other. We know that. I mean, there was this hot mic moment when they met each other at the Ballon d'Ors a couple of years ago, a ceremony, where they basically, it was like a bromance fest. They were just basically, you know, talking about each other, how much they love each other and all that stuff. So we know there's feeling between them. Mm-hmm. But I do think that, you know, if Napoli wasn't experiencing this complete implosion and meltdown, and De Laurentiis hadn't gone off the rails and off the deep end like he's done now, and there wasn't an open warfare as it was now, then Napoli would have been the best bet, because when you talk about challenges, going to Naples and repeating what Maradona has done by winning the Scudetto would have been the ultimate finale to that man's career.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see that happening. I honestly don't, because Ancelotti is not there for long. I don't think a lot of the players that are there will be there for much longer. I think we're going to see next summer, latest, a giant clear out of players, or maybe even De Laurentiis leaving. We don't know. There's rumors that the PSG ownership would like to go there as well. I mean, we'll have to wait and see. We honestly have to wait and see.
I've seen those numbers at somewhere around 800 million euro. It's crazy, crazy numbers, but De Laurentiis is a crazy, crazy person. So in your heart of hearts, though, where do you feel, if you had to give me one team, one name, where does Zlatan go?
Where I think or where I want?
Because both. Give me both. Yeah, give me where you think first.
Where I would want him to go. I mean, I would love to have him at Inter. I would absolutely love to have him at Inter. I mean, if Antonio Conte is hell bent on having a big guy play as a backup to Lukaku or someone who can rotate, I'd rather that be Zlatan Ibrahimovic at the age of 68 over Olivier Giroud at the age of 33. But that's just what I want. That's not going to happen. It's going to be Olivier Giroud. Right. I think that's the worst kept secret in football right now. As to where I think he will go, I think with the Napoli thing being as it is, for me it's Milan. I think it's Milan. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Wow. I'd say it's Milan. Yeah, for me, I think he's going to Milan. But then again, you have to remember if a team has a big injury, if a PSG, if Icardi were to break his leg at PSG, God forbid, then they'd have to reinforce, and then who else then to bring back than him? You know what I mean? Like something like that. But to me, I think Milan, because Milan, of all the clubs he's been to, I think Milan was the club that made him the most, that made him the happiest. He loves the city of Milan. He loves Italy. That's the second home. But it wouldn't surprise me. Also, I wouldn't rule out the fact that maybe he just calls it quits and says, you know, that's it. That's all you're getting.
Rob, what about? I do have one more option. What about? And maybe this is a long shot, but what about him going back to Sweden?
That's not going to happen. That's never going to happen. He said it himself that he's never going to play in Allsvenskan, the Swedish top league, ever again. It's not going to happen.
And that's actually what I was going to suggest too. Is what about going back to Malmo?
No. He can't live in Malmo. Malmo is a very small, tiny city, and it wouldn't work. He wouldn't be able to have a normal life. Like it would just not work.
He's bigger than Malmo.
Sorry?
He's bigger than Malmo.
No, Malmo is a small place. I mean, it's the third biggest city in Sweden, but Sweden, if you look at it in terms of
population is a country of 9 million. Malmo has what, 200,000-300,000 people. Like he couldn't, it's a small place. Right. And he couldn't live there. I think the only city that he could be able to live in would be Stockholm, but he would never want to play for any of those clubs. And he's made that absolutely clear throughout his entire life.
Mm. Rob, how about you? Where do you think he might land?
Yeah, I was thinking about this as well. I think if the issues that have been going on over there in Napoli haven't been happening, and the fact that he has such a good relationship with Ancelotti, I think he would have been a great destination for him, as like you said, Nima, to repeat what Maradona did and win a Scudetto for the team. But I think just because of the way, I do see as two options as well. I think given, well, I think maybe the age factor is an issue here, but you know, it's not uncommon for them to finish their career and say, you know, call it quits right there, right now. But just given the form that he's in, maybe he's looking for that extra motivation. I think he definitely has to go back to Milan. I think that's the thing I see it in terms of what he might realistically do. I think he'll go there, or I think he just calls it quits and finish his career.
Yeah, you know, go ahead, Nima. I'm sorry.
No, I think he's been very, 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 like very, very clear about the fact that if he wants to go, he wants a contract for a year and a half, and not just for 6 months. Because I mean, the thing is with this guy is that, you know, he's a physical specimen. Like his physique is unbelievable, and he's taken care of his body throughout his entire career. This is a lot of people forget about him and Ronaldo, that these people are model professionals. Ibra doesn't drink. He doesn't drink a drop of alcohol. He doesn't do any drugs. He doesn't do any legal or illegal drugs as we know. I mean, he takes care of his body. He takes care of his physique, and he trains like a madman. And he that's his way, the same way Cristiano Ronaldo does. And that's his way of, you know, that's why he's been able to play at such a high level for such a long time.
Mm. You know, I, again, and that they treat their bodies like temples, and it allows for the longevity that we're seeing out of these players. Like you said, Cristiano Ronaldo, out of Zlatan, you know, we've seen it. I've got to tell you guys, there is a little piece of me. I think I agree with you guys with the Milan prediction, thinking that he goes back to Milan, puts them back on the right track. I could definitely see that happening. But there's a small piece of me that says that he stays in MLS, but he goes to New York.
Wouldn't surprise me. That would make a lot of sense.
Yeah,
because New York City is a city that would fit his personality and his. I mean, he's done it in LA. Now he goes to New York, and NYCFC, who is owned by Man City, the same conglomerate that owns them, he can go. Yeah, he goes there. New York is a big city that can suit him. That's the kind of city he wants to live in. Mm-hmm. Also, he's got a lot of financial dealings with real estate and stuff in New York. So, because I mean, the guy isn't just a football player; he's a billionaire, and he has a lot of investments and stuff. So, I think New York would be a natural step. Absolutely.
I think if he does stay, what about trying to kick off the new team in Miami with Beckham?
That could also happen as well, for sure. Yeah. Why not? They're good friends. They're absolutely good friends. And they you know, Beckham and him, Miami is also a place where celebrities like him can live easily without being harassed. Mm. But yeah, why? I mean, sure, for sure. Why not? But the thing is, though, I don't think a new, like, he wants to go somewhere where everything has already been sorted. You know what I mean? Where things are taken care of. And unless Beckham can guarantee him that level that he's ready at, I don't see that happening.
I agree. Yeah, an established place. Although Miami, you know, certainly the lights, you know, the beach, those are Zlatan things, right? But at the same time, I agree. I think he wants something established. I think he'd want to win a trophy. That's why I'm not.
He wants to win a trophy. He absolutely wants to win a trophy for sure.
And that's why I think there's as much of a chance of him going to NYCFC as there is of him going to Milan, because NYCFC is really in a position that they could turn around and win a trophy. They are that good. Even the Red Bull would be the same idea. But, you know, moving to like a Bologna, even to Milan, I don't think they win the Scudetto if he shows up either this year or next year. So You know, I don't
That's true.
Now he could sneak into like a Champions League spot. I don't know, but I just don't see. I don't see the trophies coming to those two clubs anytime soon. So
I mean, it depends. I mean, if it turns out that the you have to remember De Laurentiis, he bought Napoli for €1 when they were bankrupt, and he's built them up. So for him to sell the club for €500 million or whatever, €400 million, whatever it is, it would just be a giant profit for him.
Oh, sure.
Because he's, you know, so I think, and also the Altani family, who he knows from his time at PSG. I mean, if that sale were to happen at some point before, you know, maybe not this January, but if it happened before next summer, I would definitely. Then I think Ancelotti stays for one, and I think Ibra would go there.
I agree. I totally agree there. And you know, Napoli in Champions League have looked pretty good. That's a team that could win a trophy. You know, so I know they've been a disaster in the Serie A this year, but they're still looking very good in Champions League, and I think that is a possibility for them. So that wouldn't be a landing spot. Let's fast forward. Let's actually, since we're going to jump into Europe, let's talk about the Euros, because as qualifying is winding down, our last matches for the group stages are really tomorrow, and then we have the playoffs. Italy really put an impressive performance in today with a 9-1 victory over Armenia. And, you know, they got goal scoring from multiple places. Even Chiesa got in on the goal scoring, which you hadn't seen yet. You know,
but he was fantastic today. Chiesa was absolutely amazing. He hit the woodwork twice or even three times. Mm-hmm. And I think he showed that he's a superstar. Mm-hmm. He's the fuori classe. In my opinion, him and Gigio Donnarumma are right now, today on this day, the players that are closest to becoming candidates to winning the Ballon d'Or for Italy. Okay. Chiesa is today. I mean, we haven't. I mean, everybody who follows me on Twitter knows I'm head over heels in love with Sandro Tonali, but I don't see that today yet. But this Italy side as a whole is just. I see them winning the Euros. I absolutely do. Yeah, absolutely do.
Tonali's a little too young right now to talk about that, but man, that kid has really. I'm with you on the Tonali fanboy club. I'm completely. If you're the president, I'm the vice president. I mean, seriously.
Yeah. I mean, this kid is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, this midfield that Italy has. I mean, you know, Sensi, Barella, Tonali. That is, and then you have Jorginho, Castrovilli. You know, I can go on for another 10 days if I wanted to, just naming these central midfielders that is so important, that have the qualities that are so important in modern football. And I feel that, you know, Roberto Mancini doesn't get a lot of the respect that I think he deserves as a coach. That Manchester City team that he built before Guardiola came in and rebuilt it, that city he built played some of the most interesting modern fast-paced football that I've seen, and his Italy is a mirror of that, and I didn't see it happening this fast. I knew I wanted him to become the national team coach because he has a history of being an absolutely brilliant coach to bring in young players and introduce them into the fold. He's done it everywhere he's been, but this Italy team is just it's such a Mancini team. He's the perfect coach to have for these young players to have as a coach and vice versa. So it's I'm really excited about Italy. I really do. I think for a number of reasons as well. I mean, Germany under Löw. It's not, you know, this new Germany Yogi Löw 2.0, it's not really clicking yet. They're going to be good, but, you know, Spain is nowhere near what they used to be. France have already peaked and are a little bit on their way down. For me, it's the favorites are Belgium. I think if you look at that squad, if you look at that squad, they're in the perfect age to. Now is the time when they're supposed to peak and win something. But if you look at other than that, to me, it's Italy. It's Italy and Belgium.
And Rob, you know, just to jump in here.
Yeah, no, I also want to jump in. You know, please. You also have other teams, maybe like England, maybe like the Netherlands, who with their new generation, you know, those kind of teams as well.
I still feel that the Netherlands, they have the best defense.
Portugal as well.
Yeah, Portugal, that's exactly, I'm glad you brought them. I think both of those teams are teams that maybe need another 2 years to kind of really gel in. I think they're still too young to be contending. England, for sure. If they can repeat that, you know, if they can get the same team spirit they had in the World Cup, then for sure this is a very exciting team. England are, you know, Harry Kane is one of the best central forwards and number nines in the world. They have a good defense. I think England will be thereabouts, but central midfield, if you look at it internationally, in terms of like quality and depth, Belgium, Italy, and Germany. Mm-hmm. And France are the ones to look out for, but mm-hmm. but then there are other factors as well. And in my opinion, I think Belgium are the 100% my favorites to win, but Italy, I expect Italy to make it to the semifinals.
Mm. How about, you know, I want to bring up the newcomers in Finland. First time they've ever qualified for a knockout round of a tournament like this. What are your thoughts on them? Obviously, they got out of the same group as Italy, and the group, I mean, you'd think it was a little easy, but when you come down to Finland's level of play, Greece, Bosnia-Herzegovina, I mean, those are tough teams. So what do you think of Finland?
No, I am really happy for Finland. I think Finland, especially Jari Littman, and a player, my favorite Finnish player, who was a fantastic player for Ajax and Barcelona and Liverpool, winning the Champions League with Ajax, and part of that amazing Ajax team in the mid-90s who didn't lose a game for almost 2 years under Louis van Gaal. So, I'm so happy that Finland finally made it to a championship. It's so nice to see that happen. They've been so close before, but never really were able to, and finally they made it, and I'm really happy for them. But I don't, I mean, if they make it through the group stage, then that's a huge success in and of itself.
And I'm just going to jump in. You know, you have some other teams that have qualified as well. You know, you look at teams like Russia, you look at teams like obviously Sweden, Croatia, who made the final. You know, those are other teams that might jump in, maybe not as top favorites, but maybe as underdogs in this case.
Sweden, definitely. Sweden is a very interesting. This Sweden has so many good talents, so many young, promising players that are really ready to explode. Alexander Isak, who plays for Real Sociedad, Mattias Svanberg, who's been playing Serie A football for a year and a half. The guy's 20 years old. Dejan Kulusevski, who is. I mean, this kid is a phenomenon. I mean, it's not many, you know, you see a lot of, you know, when you watch kids play football when they start, you see a player that's good. But then usually it's not often the case that kid who was great when he was 6 years old turns out to be a great to play for the national team or play in the Serie A. Dejan Kulusevski has been the best player on every team he has played since the day he started playing football. From the age of 5 or 6, he's been the best player in every single team, every single year he's played. Making the transition to Atalanta's youth team was no exception. He was the best player on their team. And this is his first season as a professional, senior level player. And he's the best player in Parma. 5 assists, 3 goals. He's very exciting. And the thing is with him is that he never stops running. I think he's the player that averages the most distance covered per game in the Serie A after Brozovic. He never stops running. He's good with both his feet. He's destined for greatness. And Sweden is Sweden has a really exciting team. They really, really do. Victor Nilsson Lindelöf, Manchester United. They have Augustinsson, who plays for in Bundesliga and does it well. He's been injured now. Emil Kraft, who, you know, has Premier League experience and Serie A experience. No, this is and Lustig, of course. No, this is a very well balanced team. This is a very well balanced team between young and old, and they won't concede a lot, and they will cause teams a lot of problems. Sweden. So Sweden is definitely one to look out for. Croatia, for sure. Although I think that their midfield with, you know, Rakitic, Modric, is, you know, they're a little bit past it. Kovacic has been fantastic. I think he's the one to build around, and Brozovic too. Mm-hmm. Pašalić as well. I think those are the players to build around. But I don't think that Dalic will do that. We'll have to see. There's a lot of teams that can win it for sure. But in my opinion, if you look at squads, like in terms of depth, width, height, all that, in terms of quality, for me, this is Belgium. Belgium are the big favorites. They are in the absolute best moment of their for a team to win a trophy and to win something. And Belgium has everything. But aside from them, France, Germany, Italy, I'd say.
Yeah. One more team before we're done with the Euros. One more team I want to bring up, and really I'm bringing it up because we've had so many bad stories, Nima, coming out of Europe, especially with the racism and all that talk. Things that the Kosovo fans did when England came in, you know, holding up the English flags, basically welcoming the fans, welcoming the team to Kosovo to the match, is something you don't see. And unfortunately, Kosovo were eliminated in this round, but they have made it into the path D of the playoffs. So there's still an opportunity for them to actually show up at the Euros come next summer. So I just wanted your thoughts on that display from the Kosovo fans and what it would mean to them to make it to the tournament.
Well, I mean, they said themselves that was basically them thanking England for bombing Serbia in the NATO. I mean, that was what it was. They said it themselves. That's what right. It was. The reason they did that is because the fact that the NATO and the Brits bombed Serbia for them to get Kosovo, you know, to get their independence. That's basically what it was. So it was a political manifestation for sure, and that's what it was. But it was nice to see. For sure, it was nice to see, you know, regardless of the politics behind it, it was nice for once to see that a team that an away team was not racially abused, that they were welcome, there were no clashes with fans, none of that stuff, but that it was a welcoming, you know, that it was a welcoming environment, and that's something that we've not been spoiled with, so to speak, recently in European football.
Agreed. Let's move on from the Euros. Let's come back to the United States and just quickly discuss. The U.S. had you'd term a must-win match against Canada, which is amazing to say that they have to beat Canada, because going back 1 month exactly, U.S. goes up to Toronto, loses to Canada 2-0. In the Nations League. Now they need a result. And then that also means that they have to get a result tomorrow night against Cuba in the Cayman Islands. And I can think of about 10,000 different things to do in the Cayman Islands other than play football. I've got to be honest with you. But I understand why they've moved the match there. We look back at this match, 4-1 over Canada. You know, guys like Jesse Zardes scoring, Serginho Dest finally cap tied. He's an American now. That's it. End of discussion. And you look back at the match, Canada with 60% of the possession, although they couldn't turn in any goals from their possession, you wonder, is this, Robin, I'm going to go to you with this. Mm. Have they finally, did it look like they turned the corner to you? Because it didn't look like they turned the corner to me. And again, I don't want to be a naysayer. I don't want to constantly beat up on Greg Berhalter and the U.S. men's national team. I understand what he's trying to do. But here's an opportunity. You're playing in Orlando. You're playing at home. You've got a team that you are supposed to beat. So I can't get overly excited about the fact that we beat Canada, because you're supposed to beat Canada day in and day out. But, and full confession, I did not, I listened to the first half of the match because I was driving while we were out touring colleges, but I did see the second half of the match. And what I saw, Rob, was not something that I would be overly excited about. To me, it looked like Canada had the better possession, the better run of play. They did manage to score a goal in that second half. And it just, to me, yeah, we won the match, but it's almost like there wasn't enough meat there for me to get excited about the U.S. men's national team just yet. And I don't think we're going to get that meat tomorrow night playing Cuba as well. So what were your thoughts on the match, Rob? What did you think of it overall?
Well, I did see the game, and, you know, just to quote the great Herm Edwards, you know, you play to win the game. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what the United States had to do. I think when you look at the fact that they were able to take an early lead so early on, I think the fact that they were just trying to defend well and not concede when the game was essentially over after the first half. Mm. But yeah, I get what you're saying. I don't think it's convincing. I think it's, this has been an issue that we've been seeing for the United States for quite some time. The fact that they have not been convincing, and that shows with who you have from an administrative point of view, who you have as your coach, that kind of thing. But at the same time, it generally just looks at this. Look, this is perfect motivation, and rightly so. What we're seeing here is for them to perform well in the Nations League and to qualify for the Gold Cup. I think that's what really matters. I think what also needs to point out is that what we're trying to see here is what's going to come up next August when the
qualifying starts.
The qualifying starts for the World Cup, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just that. It's just trying to find out who's right, who are the players that are destined to be on the squad. I mean, obviously you have your Pulisic, you have your McKennies, you even have your Jordan Morris, who is on great form, Sergiño Dest, all those players that have earned the spot. But you look at the other players that perhaps haven't been able to convince as well, and just go from there. I think that's what we're really seeing here. I think, yes, I would love and always would love to see the United States do well. But we have to realize that, you know, there are teams emerging. Canada want to go to, they want to do well. They want to go to a World Cup more than anything. And I see it. I see a team that wants to go to that hex and qualify for the World Cup. And, you know, that's that ambition here. You know, the tide has changed. Heading into a new decade, I think now kind of a realization of how the United States and Mexico have always dominated CONCACAF. We're seeing the tide of other teams coming up. Trying to spoil that party and trying to find a bit more parity. So I think it's just that. I mean, yeah, it's not pretty, but I think hopefully, and God forbid that whatever happens next year, that we will see a different team playing in a different style that hopefully Berhalter will do when the games matter most.
Right.
I think it's always good to qualify to a Gold Cup. I think to win a continental title is big for any team. I think we know that. Obviously, talking for the Euros, but Nima. But it just needs to matter when the games become much more important. This is not me saying anything bad towards the Nation Leagues or anything. But in the end, I think come next year is when we'll really start to become all the criticism if needed.
Yeah, and Nima, you know, obviously being in Sweden, you were much more in tune with the UEFA Nations League play that we saw last year with Portugal moving on, and that. Was there a little more emphasis than you expected placed on the Nations League? And for the United States, obviously not qualifying for the World Cup in 2018, we saw the Netherlands, we saw it happen to them, we saw it happen to Italy. They all made massive changes in their coaching staff, in their philosophies, and we see the fruits of that. You know, we just went on about Italy, you know, waxing poetic for a while on a team that went unbeaten in Euro qualifying. We're talking about the Dutch who are going to the Euros as well. The U.S. hasn't turned that corner. And, you know, can you think of a team that maybe that's happened to in Europe where they failed and then they failed to make the right moves to turn the ship back around?
Well, I mean, it depends on who you're asking. If you're asking the British Beltway press or the English Beltway press, they'll say that's you're talking about England, because obviously they invented the game and football's coming home and all that nonsense.
Right.
But if we look at like realistically, I think that Germany, I can't really say that about Germany either, because Well, you can. I mean, Germany failed in the Euro 2000s. For a couple of European championships in a row, Germany failed, and then they completely went the opposite direction ahead of the world, ahead of the 2006 World Cup, which they hosted, and then since then, and they redid everything from the bottom up. But before them, between I'd say after 96 and between 96 and 2004, Germany really flopped many times over, except for the final in the 2000, reaching the final of the FIFA World Cup 2002. But besides that, they kept failing and they didn't do anything. They didn't get it right until they really got it right. And now look at Germany now. I mean, Jesus, Germany dominates at youth level. They've been dominating at senior level for almost a decade now. So I think, yeah, you could look at Germany as an example, but then again, Germany has a different culture and a different history, and the level is different as well. No, I wouldn't be so worried about this. I think what happened last time around when the US didn't qualify for the World Cup was one of those things that I think the last game against Panama again. I mean, they shouldn't have lost that. I think there were a couple of
Trinidad.
Sorry, yeah, no, but there was like a couple of refereeing decisions that were like horrible that went against them. I think that was just one of those things. I don't think that'll ever happen again, especially with this new generation of American player led by Christian Pulisic, who is definitely on target on becoming the best American player of all time. He is the real deal. This kid is look at what he's doing in the Premier League. Then you have a host of American players in the Bundesliga, which is a top four European league, and they're playing week in, week out, and they're doing it well. So no, I don't think the panic that ensued immediately afterwards. Sure, you need to make changes, of course. When we have a debacle like that, then everyone who was in charge of that debacle should leave. And they did. But you don't have to reinvent the wheel, because I mean if you look at it at the end of the day, if you look at the quality of that, you know, if you look at the teams that the US have to beat to qualify for a World Cup, you know, the US will beat those teams 9 times out of 10.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Except for Mexico, which is different because you have a rivalry, and Mexico is a quality team.
And even then, that goes either way when you think about it.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, Mexico and the U.S. are on the same level, and then there's a bit of a drop down to the others. With all due respect to all the other teams, I think what happened there was just one of those one-time. You know, like what do they call the Miracle on Ice when a bunch of U.S. college kids beat the Soviet Big Red Machine? Like, it's just these things happen in sports once in a while, and sometimes you're on the winning end of it, and sometimes you're on the you get the crappy end of the stick of that. So you know, that's why we love sports, isn't it? The unpredictability of it.
Exactly.
So I wouldn't make too much of it. I think I actually expect big things from U.S. soccer from now on. To be honest, I think they have a really good basis of good players. Maybe it's time to bring in a foreign coach that had someone like Ancelotti. You know what I mean? Someone who's a winner. With all due respect to Klinsmann, he wasn't a proven national team coach when he took over the U.S. national team. He'd done well with Germany, but that's about it. He'd failed at Bayern Munich. But I would love to see someone like that take over the U.S. national team coach.
I would have loved Antonio Conte, to be honest with you. But that's...
You want Antonio Conte?
Bielsa. No, Bielsa. Just get Bielsa
the thing is, though, I think Antonio Conte and the U.S. would never work because for so many reasons. I think... He wouldn't. I don't think the Americans would stand him, and he wouldn't stand America. But Bielsa, now you're talking. Yeah. I mean, if we're talking Mad Men, there is no one else. I mean, I'm fascinated by him. I can't say I'm a fan because for me, watching Bielsa, because the guy is a football scholar. Like he knows so much football, but at the same time, I can't say that I admire him. But I'm completely fascinated by him in the same way that. Try driving past a car, you know, try driving past an accident and not looking, you know, like that's the kind of fascination I have with Bielsa. I think Bielsa would be incredibly entertaining for everyone. Maybe outside of U.S. soccer for sure.
Oh, they would kill him. They would kill him, massacre him, unfortunately.
And he would kill them. That's what I mean. Like that would be, that's the funny thing. I think his personality and, that's why I so want Leeds to go up this year, because I think the world is owed a season of Premier League football with Marcelo Bielsa holding, you know, when he's criticized, holding press conferences or lectures where he teaches people football.
I have one crazy name that obviously he's a free agent now, and who knows what could happen here on out, but why not a guy like Mourinho?
I think that would work because he understands the media and the dynamics. I think it would suit him better. Conte, I don't think Conte could manage any other national team except the Italian one. To be honest, I think there would be such a major culture clash everywhere else he would go that it wouldn't work. But Mourinho for sure. Mourinho would be very interesting. Mourinho would be, but I don't think he would want that. I think he when he turned England down, I think he did it because I think he only wants to coach Portugal.
Mm. Ah, that makes sense. So, all right, let's move on. Let me give you guys a bunch of matches to look out for this week as we finish the final international break and we move back into club matches. So for the last international break, we do have one more spot available in the Euros to directly qualify from the group stages here, and that match is going to play out tomorrow afternoon at 2:45 with Wales hosting Hungary. The winner of that match is going to move on into the Euros itself, so we're gonna have to keep an eye on that. On Friday in Ligue 1, PSG and Lille will face off at 2:45 p.m. And then we have a host of matches on Saturday in the Serie A, Atalanta-Juve at 9 a.m. Leverkusen, yeah, exactly. Leverkusen-Freiburg in the Bundesliga at 9:30. Manchester City-Chelsea in the EPL at 12:30 p.m. And Real Madrid-Real Sociedad at 3 p.m. in La Liga. You're basically going to have Sunday off, guys, because all the big matches are on Saturday. So, gentlemen, let me give you the trivia question again, and then I'll take your answers from it. Cristiano Ronaldo scored his 99th goal, making him second all-time on the international goals list. And he is tops of the active international players for goal scoring. Can you give me the top five? There are six names, including Ronaldo's, as there is a tie for fifth place. So, Rob, I'm going to go to you first. Any names you want to throw out at me?
Well, I think the one that is generally always going to be on these lists and general records, period, was someone that scored today. And I'm going to give you Lionel Messi.
He is third on the list, 69 goals for Argentina. You got anybody else you want to give me?
I feel like this name is there, but I feel like it's too early. Is it Harry Kane?
Harry Kane is not on the list yet. It is too early. Nima, are there any names you want to throw at me while we're doing this?
Lukaku, for sure.
Lukaku is not on the list.
Oh,
really?
He's not in the top five. No. He's not.
Wow.
Let me call up
I got one. I know exactly. Everyone's favorite prima donna, Neymar.
Neymar is not on this list. Neymar's not in the top five.
Never mind then.
And I'm looking just on the overall list because I don't have it broken out. But Lukaku has 52 goals. He is currently 35th overall. There are, in terms of active players, there are two players ahead of him. So that would make him.
And they're still on the national team, you're saying?
Still on the national team.
That's what I was going to say. When you say active, do you mean as in active, as in still part? Because Zlatan Ibrahimovic just scored 62 goals. I mean, I don't know. Is he qualified to be on that list because he still plays? Or,
but then retire from the national team.
He retired from the national team.
Yeah,
right,
okay,
so he's off.
Okay, so it's players that have retired from the national team.
Correct.
Okay.
Players that have not retired.
Because Ibra's still playing, but he doesn't play for the national team.
If
Ibra were eligible, he would be fourth on this list, by the way.
All right, let me give you a name that has been obviously making a lot of records so far. Robert Lewandowski?
Robert Lewandowski's fourth on this list. 60 goals for Poland. He's still active.
I knew he'd be on that list.
So, yeah, Lewandowski is definitely one of those.
Yeah. You got three names.
Three names.
One name from South America, one name from Europe, and one name from Asia.
Okay, from South America, then if it's not Neymar, then it has to be Suarez because he's the
Suarez
one.
Suarez,
yeah,
is one of the tied players for fifth on 58 goals for Uruguay.
Yeah.
So you have a European and you have
Asia
and you have an Asian player.
There's always this one. There's always this one,
and this is the one.
Okay. Oh, it is one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't get that one, Nima.
No, I was thinking because I know the all-time number one is the Iranian
Ali Daei.
Yeah, Ali Daei. But I don't see anyone in Iran having played because this is a pretty young team. I can't see anyone from Iran having scored that many goals.
No.
I wonder if it's South Korea or Japan. Those are the two
neither.
Countries I'm thinking.
Neither of
it's
those.
Neither.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I give up.
We still got a European player on this list too.
Oh, okay.
Well, Thomas Müller retired, so it can't be him.
Correct. It's not him. I don't see Müller's name here.
Is it? Wait, I think he's always on these lists. I feel like for some reason he's got to be on this list. Is it Olivier Giroud?
No, it's not Olivier Giroud.
Okay.
It can't be Griezmann, can it?
It is not Griezmann. It's an Eastern European name, too. I'll give you that.
Oh, man.
Eastern
European.
I'm thinking Russia. What's the name?
No, not that far east.
No. Southeastern?
Northeastern?
I can't think of where this country is, if it's south or north. I think it's more northeastern.
What region? Maybe that may be easier.
I might give it away.
It's not Timo Pukki, is it?
It is not Timo Pukki. It is not.
No. Yeah, I was going to say, he's got 25 goals only. Yeah.
Guys, want me to give you the last two names?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, go ahead.
So the other guy that was tied for fifth is the European. It is Edin Dzeko. 58 goals for Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Yeah, that's
And the one you guys were almost definitely not going to get is the number two active goal scorer right now, Sunil Chhetri from India, 72 goals.
Yeah.
He would never have got that.
Yeah, me neither.
Yep, it's number two on the list. So your top five active players, number one, Cristiano Ronaldo, 99 goals for Portugal. Number two, Sunil Chhetri, 72 goals for India. Number three, Lionel Messi, 69 goals for Argentina. Number four, Robert Lewandowski, 60 goals for Poland. And tied for fifth place, Edin Dzeko and Luis Suarez. Dzeko, 58 goals for Bosnia and Herzegovina. And Luis Suarez, 58 goals for Uruguay. Your trivia answer. So
that's a good question. That's a really good question.
Gentlemen, I have nothing left on the plan for tonight, so I'd like to hit the closing music and thank both of you gentlemen for joining me.
Sounds good.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Let's do it. So, for episode 263 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to you, Nima Tavale, for joining us tonight and for the duration of the show. It was fantastic. Next week, we're going to get back into league action. We're going to look back on the Atalanta-Juve matchup. We're going to look back on the Manchester-Chelsea match as well and get ready for Turkey Day here in the United States and more Champions League action. So, for episode 263 of Low Limit Football, I'm Joe Uccello.
I'm Ray Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.